What's up, Yap Squad, and welcome back to another episode of Yap Sesh Podcast. If you are new here, my name is Brooke, and I am with my co-host Sawyer, and we are Yap Sesh, a fangirl podcast where we discuss all things fandom and nerdy and hope to share the experiences of women and queer fans and femme fans everywhere. Please find us on Spotify and our YouTube channel and maybe some other places coming up soon, and make sure to subscribe and follow so you never miss an episode. What's up?
Oh, I am just so tired this week. I don't know what it is. I think it's so crazy that we're coming up on August already. What's up with that?
Yeah, that is wild. I have got like a couple weeks of my summer camp that I work left, and it feels like it just started.
And then you're coming to see me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't wait. It'll be super fun. Great weekend. We'll get some Yap Sesh photos, maybe, hopefully. For that hashtag promo. But we had a super awesome conversation with our friend Jen Markham, who is the guest for this episode. We talked all things content creation, the ins and outs. I know we discussed a little bit of the same topic with Molly Damon a couple weeks back, but I think this conversation was totally different. We talked a lot more about how you get into content creation and all the different facets of it and all that good stuff. So I hope you all enjoy. But some updates and some news. I thought it would be fun. We are just coming off of San Diego Comic-Con, and there were a lot of really cool announcements. So I had made some bullet points of some things that I wanted to highlight that I'm excited for. And then maybe some other things that maybe we're not so excited for. But I wish we got to go to San Diego Comic-Con maybe next year. That would be super cool.
Next year.
Yeah, manifesting it now. But since we're Star Wars fans in this house, I wanted to highlight that there is a whole bunch of new Star Wars publishing announcements, including some tie-in Acolyte novels, which I was not expecting at all. Honestly,
you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I'm not 100% sure that the Star Wars publishing team was expecting them either. this is not me being a hater, because I was so thrilled when they announced all the Acolyte stuff we're getting. We're getting a visual guide. We're getting an art guide. And then we're getting Kel Naka in the High Republic comics, which is so cool. That, I believe, was planned. And I also believe that the Vernestra novel by Justina Ireland, is it Justina Ireland and Tessa Grand, or is it just Justina Ireland?
So Justina Ireland is writing the novel called Wayseeker, and that is the one that is going to feature an older Vernestra Rowe and Indara from the Acolyte. And Tessa Grattan is writing a novel that is going to feature Jeki and Yord, and hashtag Jeki Jam and Yord Horde lives on.
Yeah, so that is the one that I don't necessarily think was on their slate, but because of response to the characters, they were like, we have to do a buddy cop thing with these two. And I couldn't be happier about it, but it was like untitled book, untitled cover. I was like, okay, I think
it was just like two promotional pictures of Jeki and Yord on the screen. I'm like, now that I think about it, they totally were like, oh fuck, like we didn't realize how popular these characters were. We gotta do something because we killed them off.
But and also Indara is going to feature in the Vernestra novel, which is really cool, because I think a lot of people, especially after the later episodes of the Acolyte, were hoping to see more from her character.
Yes.
What else we got? We're getting another volume of The Art of Star Wars: The High Republic by Kristen Baber, which is really exciting. A lot of High Republic news at this publishing panel, which was amazing.
Yes, I am so excited. I know it on the screen, on the page, it says cover not final, but I really hope that this is the cover of the volume 2 of The Art of Star Wars, because it features Eivar and Vernestra, and I I think it's Bell, but I can't tell because he's got short hair now in phase three. But they're all donned in like Clone Wars-esque armor. And I'm just like, if you didn't think that Avar Chris was Elven before, you got to think it now. And it looks amazing. If you have not looked it up, please look it up on Twitter, Instagram, or whatever. It is a beautiful cover. And all of the artwork from the High Republic things that have come out are just chef's kiss.
Yes. So very excited about those announcements. And then today there was another separate from SDCC announcement about a series of books regarding Bail and Brea Organa and Mon Mothma and the inner workings of the, is it the New Republic or is it their time in the Galactic
Center? It is the between episodes 3 and 4. So
gotcha.
The dark very times, cool. I guess. But I think, what is it called? Yes. The reign of the Empire or something of that. So yeah, that's not something I expected, but it seems cool. And I feel like it's been a while since we've gotten a series of books outside of the High Republic that are like sequential. So that'll be cool. And then I don't know, switching gears a little, some other San Diego Comic-Con stuff. We didn't really get much else out of Lucasfilm, but that's because, you know, Celebration is going to be in April, and I'm sure that they are going to do most of their announcements there and at D23 in September. So I'm sure we'll have some news then. But Marvel, of course, always has their big Hall H panel, and they gave us lots of updates and some announcements on things. They brought out the Captain America cast, and anytime Harrison Ford is excited about being in something, I love it. He did like the big Hulk smash kind of vibe, like hulking out, I think is what you call it, on stage, and that was really adorable, and I love him. We got some
Fantastic
updates.
Four.
Yeah, we got Fantastic Four news. They're filming, I think, starting this week, so that's really exciting. Mm-hmm. They brought out the cast of the Thunderbolts, but then they still have not explained why there's an asterisk next to the Thunderbolts, and that is because in my DeLulu brain, which it's also not that delusional because in the comics, Zemo is the leader of the fucking Thunderbolts. And if you don't know anything about me, when the Falcon and the Winter Soldier came out, I've always been a big Zemo fan. I thought he was one of the most like interesting villains that the MCU has ever had. But I just fell in love with him watching Falcon and the Winter Soldier. It's my favorite MCU show. I know that's an unpopular opinion. But anyway, he leads the Thunderbolts in the comics. And I'm like, you can't have the Thunderbolts without Zemo. And it's either going to be that, or like in the comics, the Thunderbolts are actually like undercover supervillains called the, like, I don't remember what they're called. But anyway, Zemo's got to be in it, or I will tear Marvel Studios to the ground. This is a joke.
I'm already ready to do that. I'm sorry. I'm in my hater era.
We also got one last announcement that the Russo brothers will be returning to Marvel to direct the next two installments of Avengers films. And then something weird happened. And I had to go downstairs after I saw this on Twitter. My boyfriend was playing video games, and I was like, I have to stop you for a second because I need to tell you a real sentence. And the words that are going to come out of my mouth is something real that just happened. It's not a joke. And what happened was they brought the Russo brothers out. They said, yay, we're doing the next two Marvel movie or next two Avengers movies. One of them is going to be called Avengers Doomsday. So woohoo, Dr. Doom. And then they brought out a figure in a mask, and they were like, we're gonna unveil who's playing Dr. Doom. And the last fucking person I expected to come out of that fucking mask, Robert Downey Jr. I'm so confused. I have so many questions. It's either brilliant or terrible. And I kind of feel like we're both on the same page of being a little bit of little haters on this. At the moment.
I love Robert Downey Jr. I love Iron Man. I think he is phenomenal. I think his Oscar for Oppenheimer was so deserved. Why? Like, I just, first of all, there was no reason why they couldn't recast Kang. They should have recasted Kang. I think people were a little skeptical about where that direction was going, because I personally feel like the MCU has been disjointed for a while now. There's been some really good projects that I've loved that have come out of it, you know, like Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. Where has he been? I loved that movie.
Right.
You know, and No Way Home, sure, but like, they don't even have to bring Spider-Man back if they don't want to. Like, that was a great movie. I don't feel like it necessarily tied anything into anything. And, you know, so, and I love Deadpool and Wolverine. It was fun. You know, I feel like they tackled the hurdle of making the first rated R Disney film, and they did it well. It feels cheap. It feels like they don't know, they can tell that there's been some superhero fatigue and they're losing interest. And, you know, it's really only the diehard fans that are seeing every Marvel project anymore. And I think that general audience that was there for Iron Man and there for Captain America, we still have a Captain America, but they're there for Chris Evans as Captain America rather, are tired of the MCU. And so this was like their, oh, we're going to save it with the guy that brought it to life in the first place. And it's like, okay, I think he can act the role? Yes. Do I think they could possibly explain away why he has the same face as Iron Man? Yes, we have the multiverse in play. But it just feels very, like, I just can't feel excited about it. And I also, like, you know, I've seen a lot of discourse online. Why didn't they just recast Kang? You know, like, why are we bringing the white guy back? And I think that's valid as fuck.
Yeah. Well, especially when they've already established that you can look different in different universes. Like, all of the Peter Parkers are different actors, right? So they're different faces. Mm-hmm. We know we had a Reed Richards in the Multiverse of Madness. We know that that's not the same Reed Richards that we're getting in the Fantastic Four film. It does feel just a little cheap, like they didn't listen to any of the things that people were actually saying online, or they were taking what were people were saying online out of, I don't know, context of what they wanted. I think most people that were not bigots, who were mad that they were introducing more people of color and queer characters, etc., into more female superheroes, we just wanted something that was a little less disjointed. And it's, I know that COVID played a role in some of it, but not all of it, because, you know, it's 2024 now. Some of these characters, like you said, Shang-Chi, I loved the movie, but we haven't seen him in 3 years. That movie came out in 2021, you know? And also, like, I don't want to dwell on it too long, but just the fact that they have, Dr. Doom is supposed to be of Romani descent.
And I didn't even know that until this news came out. And then I was like, okay, no, we can't do this again. We've already done this.
Yeah. And so that now this is another character that they have whitewashed, and which is, I don't know, disappointing. I feel like it's like becoming a trend in other areas too. I mean, everybody drink. I'm going to talk about The Last of Us. But who they cast as Dina. Dina in The Last of Us Part 2 she's a big part of her character is that she's Jewish, and there's a whole scene in the game where she talks about it, and I thought it was really cool. And then they cast a Latino actor, and I think she's going to be really great. But I was just like, I thought that was a very integral part of Dina's character. And it's not that they can't still do that storyline. It's just, it would have been nice to see like an actual Jewish actor in the role. But alas,
I mean, as a Jewish person, it doesn't always bother me. Mm-hmm. It depends though. You know, like there was a show a couple years ago with Steve Carell and Donald Gleason, where Donald Gleason plays this serial killer that kidnaps his psychiatrist. And a huge part of Steve Carell's character is that he is Jewish and his son became Orthodox. And that was a huge point of tension in their family. Uh-huh. It was very clear to me that there were Jewish writers like prominently at the forefront of the writing room, because Steve Carell, not Jewish, but I felt like it was portrayed in a very honorific way. So that's not always for me, but I'm not the only Jewish person in the world. I'm not Romani. I don't, you know, I understand why representation is so important. And so I'm not here to take away anybody's feelings on that, because I totally get it. And I think everybody was really excited when they cast, I can never say his name correctly, the guy from The Bear as the Thing. Eben Moss
Bachrach, cousin. Okay. I love him. You haven't watched The Bear, you should. Hopefully we'll have, another update before we get into our meat of the episode with our interview, is we are going to hopefully be starting to make some new content that is exclusive to our either Spotify or podcast listeners. So it'll be like audio only episodes, but we both consume a lot of things and don't always have a place to talk about them. And, you know, we have great conversations in our main episodes and recapping things like The Acolyte, but we don't always get to recap other stuff that we watch. So hopefully we'll do an episode on season 3 of The Bear, even though it's been a month now that since it's come out, but it's fine. We don't have to be, you know, the first people to talk about everything. But yeah, anyway, I think that'll be really fun to start doing.
Yeah, I'm super excited. And we're also going to be focusing a little bit more on audio content, and we have lots of ideas, some merch ideas. We have lots of ideas brewing. You'll hear more about them soon.
Hell yeah. Without
further ado, let us get into our wonderful conversation with Jen Markham. Well, today we have a wonderful guest with us. I'm so excited that you're here. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Jen Markham. I'm a Star Wars content creator like you both. And I mostly do video, and I'm on YouTube and Instagram Reels and TikTok.
Yes. And if you aren't already following Jen, I don't know what you're doing, because she has to be one of the most amazing costumers and funniest people in the Star Wars community. And I am honored to know you. And I'm so excited that you're here today to talk with us. But we always like to kind of start our show by asking about your content, what kind of stuff you do, in case people don't know. And then we would also like to know, what was your first ever fandom, and what is your favorite fandom?
Oh, great. These are good questions. So my content is, I'm pretty lucky to say that I get to do a lot of different things. But I was mostly a cosplayer, and I would, I'd post what I was making and communicate with friends on Instagram, just do posts and stuff, photos, ever since I started cosplaying and gotten that community. And then when the pandemic happened in 2020, like a lot of people, we found TikTok and we're goofing off on there and started making video. And for me, I got really, really, really lucky. And so my videos took off. And from there, you know, YouTube Shorts happened, and I started making videos there as well. So I make videos first in costume. I show off how I make my stuff. I make goofy skits. I do little vlogs about my life. And, you know, I kind of do it full time now, which is just crazy to me. I work hard, but I got really, really lucky, and I'm really grateful. My first fandom was Star Wars. Everyone asks me, when did you become a Star Wars fan? I'm like, it's always. We had the soundtrack albums growing up. I remember that on vinyl, and I just remember listening to them and looking at the pictures. That was my first memory of Star Wars. It's my primary, I would say. I'm also, I make content about Marvel, a little bit about Ghostbusters, Wonder Woman. And then I don't know about you guys, I'm in fandoms that I never make content about.
But I was just about to ask, yeah, are there any things that you really enjoy, like just in your own time?
Well, I mean, I know everything about Harry Potter. I don't really make content about it. For reasons. And then Doctor Who too, and Star Trek as well. You know, I grew up watching Star Trek, and I'm not super current on the current new ones, but I hear some of them are amazing. I've seen Picard. But I've never made any content about those things. So in terms of the best fandom, I was just thinking about this today, maybe because of how unfortunately there's been a little dark thread going through with Star Wars fandom right now. I was thinking like, oh, but at the same time, I think the best Star Wars fans are the best of people. When they're the best, they're the best in the world. But like, I would say overall, I gotta go Doctor Who. I am not deep in that fandom, so obviously there's gonna be bad apples, right? But I have never, every time everyone's happy and relaxed and just goofy and fun. I think it sometimes mirrors the content, right? Because I feel that about Ghostbusters too. Like Ghostbusters fans are great because those are comedies, you know? So everyone, if you love that, you're gonna be drawn to someone that has like a sense of humor, but maybe loves science and you're just like a cool, laid back, happy, goofy nerd. That fandom and Doctor Who are like, I think, some of the two overall best. Yeah, and then Trek's like the original, but I think, you know, Trekkies walk so we all could run, right? So,
Yeah. No, we've had a few conversations with people who started like in Star Trek, like going to conventions with their parents, because like Trekkies were kind of like the original,
yes,
like Comic-Con goers. So I love that. And my parents, I love to tell the story. My parents, when they started dating, their like favorite date night was to watch the new episode of The Next Generation. So, you know, I grew up with Star Trek as well, but Doctor Who is so great. It's funny that you say that, because I guess I have never really contextualized it that way, but I was a big Whovian growing up, and that was kind of my first exposure to like internet and internet fandom. And I wasn't making this kind of content, but I was making like digital Photoshop art. I don't know. It was a weird phase of my life. But I never ran into like grumpy people. It was just, we love Doctor Who. And honestly, I don't even remember ever having a conversation of like, oh, I hated this episode. Like there was never any, it was just like fun and sometimes a little sad because Doctor Who could be emotional, but.
Sure.
Yeah, I've never had like a bad experience with talking about Doctor Who. And I haven't seen a lot of like discourse online in the way that I see with other fandoms. And like, I got into Doctor Who like later. I had friends that were really into it like growing up. And I feel like it was one of those things that was like a little bit, you were a little weird to be interested in it, like even more so, like we talk about, if you know, it was hard growing up as a nerd or enjoying things like Star Wars, but I feel like Doctor Who was kind of in a different corner where it was like, oh, like the Doctor Who kids, at least at my, when I growing up with the people that I knew that enjoyed it. And so they already, like growing up, they didn't like, how am I trying to say this, like a lot of fans, I think, at least that I knew, it wasn't as male dominated. That's what I wanted to say.
Yes, it didn't, that's feel a good
as
point.
Dominated, yes, as other fandoms, so it felt a little bit easier to get into.
Well, safer.
I knew a lot of girls that were into Doctor Who, a lot of queer friends and people I went to school with that were into Doctor Who. So I feel like they've cultivated a more positive space in like the fandom world. Of course, like you said, there's going to be bad apples, but I really enjoy Doctor Who, and I've like never, you know, fought a dude bro online.
Yeah.
Doctor Who. So,
and Doctor Who has been around a long time, and then there's old Doctor Who and new Doctor Who, and we've seen in Star Wars obviously that people get real fussy about this and that, and I don't ever feel that with them.
No,
same with Trek. I mean, maybe I'm not super deep into it. Like there's new Trek and there's old Trek, but I think everyone's kind of cool. And same, there's old Who and there's new Who, and we get a new Doctor every, what, like 3 years now or whatever. Yeah. Everyone's just like, yeah, they have their favorites, but they're not like, ah, it's like, I don't ever hear that. But, you know, it's just nice. It feels like it's the mountaintop for me, you know.
Well, I feel like this conversation has kind of set up my next question. But as y'all know, our podcast primarily focuses on sharing like queer and femme fan experiences, and we always like to ask our guests, like, how has your experience in fandom been influenced and impacted by being a woman? How has that, you know, affected the way that you have engaged with the community. Obviously, we already briefly touched on things that are going on in Star Wars and maybe not going on in less male-dominated spaces. But yeah, we always like to hear what your story and your perspective on that.
That is such a good question. I don't know if I've ever really thought about it. I think I'm maybe from the generation that was like, well, women can do whatever men can do as long as they act like men. So it's been nice getting being a part of a new movement now. We're like, no, we can do what men, we can do anything, but we can also still be feminine and do it. You know, it's really interesting, I'll talk about myself, but even thinking about like The Mandalorian, right? Mm-hmm. I love The Mandalorian, but for a while there, you put all those female characters right next to each other and they're kind of all the same, mm-hmm. right? Like, Cara Dune is no different from Fennec Shand, is no different from Bo-Katan, is no different from the armor. I mean, and they started to differentiate later, but it's just these tough, strong women, and they don't have partners, and they don't have, you know, feminine qualities and stuff like that. And I don't know if maybe before I got into these more recent communities, I would have been aware of that as much, to be honest. So that's been really, you know, nice to see, you know, kind of... And so then for me, I try to always think about, you know, I try to think about nothing's ever going to stop me from doing what I want. But if I'm going to, you know, with the numbers I have, just keep it in mind that, like, there's so many ways to be a woman in fandom and be a woman cosplayer and, you know, present as a woman, that it's not just like, do it one way. I don't know if I answered that question very clearly, but
no, you know. I think that's a really great point that you brought up. I think that especially when you grow up in privilege, and we, you know, as a white woman, that's definitely something
definitely
we can all say. I think that that's a conversation that we may not immediately be confronted with, and something that we've all had to encounter in our own way and in our lifetime. And I think that, you know, having those conversations with other fans is a really great way to change your perspective and change the way that you're engaging. And I think that there's something very sobering about, you know, coming to those realizations and understanding how it impacts you. So I think you bring up a great point. And there's been a lot of conversation recently about what's a well-written character and this character is badly written, right. Blah, blah, blah. And I think, you know, we've had a couple conversations on this show of like, what is a well-written woman? And I think we all kind of have that same feeling, like, she needs it. It's, you know, she doesn't have to be physically strong like a man to overcome challenges. Like, there are emotional challenges to face, and you know, you can be feminine, you can have a partner, like you said, and you can still be strong. And I think that that's such a really, you know, it should, I don't know if it should be as prevalent of a conversation in this era. It feels like we should be past that already, but we're not. And so I think it's important, especially when you have a platform, to highlight that in whatever way that you can. And we'll get into that a little bit more. But we just have one. Brooke, do you want to take this one? I've asked all the intro questions.
Yeah, we've had a lot of really cool guests on our podcast. And a lot of them have like started out as fans and then either worked their way into the entertainment industry in some way or became a content creator. And I loved finding out that you did journalism before, and now you're kind of getting back into it, doing moderation for conventions. So I just wanted to ask, and like, you can answer however you want, in relation to being a professional or being a content creator, like, how has your relationship with fandom changed, I guess, over the course of your life, just, you know, going from being a fan of things to now being more of a face where people might ask you your opinions on things and stuff like that?
Well, when I was a journalist, I didn't cover entertainment pretty much. I covered sports, which is a different kind of entertainment, right? So now that I'm getting back into moderation, which is such a huge honor, it's really fun because I think the fandom piece is still expected, you know, because you want to, you know everything. Like, I just had the giant honor of being in Fan Expo Dallas, and I was moderating a panel with a bunch of Star Wars actors, and I was just kind of chit-chatting with the sound guy backstage, and I was mostly asking technical questions, like, where will the mics be and stuff, and I'm like, well, you know, I'm kind of nervous, blah, blah, blah. He's like, well, do you know anything about Star Wars in the show, and I'm like, I know everything. Oh my god, you know. So being, I was like, I do. There's nothing I don't know. And there was only time because there's four people to ask two things, and like I had enough questions for probably 8 days. So being in that kind of way, being a fan is still a part of it. And I think with content creation too, being a fan is part of the creation, right? Like people want to see. Well, I don't know what people want to see, honestly. I don't know why people watch what I do, but people want to see people being excited. And what do you think about this and that? So if anything, it's amplified. I don't think it's different. It's maybe more amplified. But am I answering what you're asking, I think?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we had another guest on, Maggie Lovett, who is awesome. And she has also done moderations for conventions and panels. And she had spoke about how being a fan has made her a better at her job doing that, because she is familiar with the things that she's, you know, the questions that she's asking. She's in tune with what the fans are talking about online. Right. It's also helped her. I think she said, like, whenever they do like fan questions from the audience, kind of like clocking when someone comes up and you're like, she's expecting it to be, you know, maybe not the most appropriate question, or figuring out how to redirect something to like that.
Or translate it for, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Translation is great. Right. Because a lot of these actors, as much as we love them and we love the things that they're in, they're like not in tune. They might not be in tune with what the fans are talking about, or like the memes or the jokes or whatever. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Sorry, Jen, we have a lot of
brain farts. Oh, no, it's okay. I'll share that, like, one example of, and being a journalist too helps you with good follow-up questions, right, even during audience questions. Like, I moderated with Adam Savage, and someone asked a great question about, of the four fandoms, I'm going to miss one, of Star Trek, Star Wars, Doctor Who, and something else. Like, what would you want to live in? And he had this great answer picking three of them. And I was like, well, what about Doctor Who? And then he admitted he didn't know that one. You know what I mean? So you kind of just, like, make sure. You know, what about this piece that this person asked about? Or like someone asked Alan Tudyk about, you know, if you could be in any, like, where would your character be right now? He's like, well, I would be where casting was. So I piped up like Andor season two, you know. he did not answer. So
bummer.
I didn't expect him to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think to your point, that's what you're saying. Like, and your fandom helps that. Like, and your journalism helps clock the question and make sure the person is answering every piece of it. And then the fandom is like, well, since you mentioned this, I know people are talking about this new show, and are you going to be in it? You know, things like that. I hope it helps out. You know, it's a very different skill in a way, like being a journalist. When you do an interview with someone for like a news piece or an article or something, usually the interviews are fairly short. Mm-hmm. So moderating a 45 minute panel is a similar skill, but a slightly different one. And there's no editing. There's no like, oh, let me ask that again, or let me cut the footage. Like, it is, you know, live audience, packed theater. So, but it's a huge honor.
And that's why we don't record this podcast live, because we can edit it.
No, but it is something, you know, that I've, you know, this, I don't know if we'll leave this in the episode, but, you know, I briefly mentioned to you when I saw you in Philly that, like, I'm having this weird moment in my life where I'm kind of having a career change, an abrupt career change. And, like, I would love to go into, you know, some kind of entertainment journalism or panel moderation, you know, so this is good practice. But also, you know, I love to have these conversations because it's so cool to see. I mean, I feel cool that I have all these friends that are going out and doing this, and like, you know, being able to combine their love for fandom with a career. I think that's just, you know, at least for Maggie, you did have journalism experience, but for Maggie, that was like a 180 for her. And that was not something that she would have ever expected that she would do. She has like a degree in anthropology or something. She was not a journalist. And then COVID hit, she started posting her like opinions, and she got, you know, now she works for Collider, which is amazing.
That's amazing.
You don't have to be licensed.
I was like, you don't have to be licensed. It's not like you're being a doctor or a lawyer or even a CPA or a nurse. Mm-hmm. Like, my undergrad is in music. My master's is in journalism. Oh, but, okay. Like, but, you know, but even if that wasn't, it's just, there's no, like, licensing training to be a journalist. And I feel like creating content is a new path that didn't maybe exist the way it did, like when I started. So, you know, because then you're building your own portfolio without an employer. I mean, without a paycheck to start, but you know what I mean? Like anyone can be really good at it just and without having to have training. Overtraining.
Yeah, for sure. But no, and that's a great segue into today's main topic. And we always try to have, I know it feels like, you know, we hope not to put you on the spot when we ask you to bring a topic, but we do just want every episode to feel fresh and different and a new conversation. And you came to me with content creation, and that's something that we haven't covered it in a full episode before. Obviously the reason we're here is because we're all content creators, but I think that there is a lot of really wonderful things that we can talk about in this topic. And, you know, just to start, what do you think of when you think of content creation, just beyond yourself? Like, what is it? And more than that, how has it changed? Because even in just the last couple of years since the pandemic, it has evolved, I think, a lot for all of us.
I mean, content creation, what's cool about it, I'm not sure if I'm going to answer your question the way you've been, but there's so many things that can be content, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's what was the big hook of TikTok at first. Mm-hmm. Was that I don't know what your FYPs are like or if you're still on the platform, but like I have learned so much about the world and the way people live their lives that I had no idea about. And I follow people that detail cars, and I follow people that mow lawns, and like all kinds of amazing things that are even ordinary things, but I just get to watch what people are doing. And I think that is really cool. It makes us all maybe a little bit, I know it sounds so cliche to say we're all more connected than we were before, but like I never thought about what certain things or certain people, what people make or what people do or what their experiences are like, you know? And anything can be content, anything, as long, and it's all about telling a story no matter what it is. So I think that's great. If we're talking narrowly in the fandom space, even that's a little bit true. I mean, there's people that talk about film and TV. There's people that dress up like in film and TV. There's people that collect Funkos. There's people that collect, read books, mm-hmm. and they make content about everything. And we all have mutuals that do a little bit of everything. And it's been really fun, this new kind of explosion, especially with video, to find people like that and get to learn so much more about the world and like little hacks, you know, with all kinds of stuff too. I don't think I answered your question at all, but that's...
No, you did. You did. Absolutely. Okay. I mean, it's like I said, these are guiding questions. They're not concrete. Yeah. You have to answer. But no, I mean, TikTok is, I think that for a lot of us, we started during the height of COVID, and because we didn't have anything to do, we couldn't go out and see your friends, and that platform, you know, I do think that it has changed a little bit for the worse
these days. I would say a lot for the worse. I mean, I'm grateful for it, but it's just it's changed so much. I don't say how bad it is now. I don't love it now, but I really loved it in 2020. Yeah. It was so fun.
It was so fun. And I think that it was different in the ways that you mentioned, you know, anybody could post anything and you could learn literally anything. I mean, yes, you can learn anything from YouTube as well, but there's also something about capturing that content in short form and it made it really engaging. And I think that something I always think about when we talk about TikTok and how we all got really started on TikTok is that it carved a space out. I really truly believe that it carved a space out for women in fandom.
Oh, interesting.
For people who are underrepresented in fandom. Whereas, you know, I still think this is true. I think that YouTube, when people think of Star Wars YouTubers or just fandom YouTubers, a lot of the time they're thinking of straight white men.
The bros,
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think TikTok turned around, and because it was this like anybody can go viral, you can post whatever, any video is going to take off. I think that, you know, that is where I really started to see other women and people of color and queer folks who were adding their voice to the conversation. And I don't think without TikTok, I don't think I would have been able to foster the community that I have, meet people like Brooke. We have this podcast now, you know, and, you know, Brooke and I, you're like, we're friends. We're not, you know, we've crossed the boundary from like, oh, we know each other on TikTok. Like, we've taken trips together and we have this show and we like, you know, we're making, you know, she'll be in my wedding whenever, you know, when that day comes, you know, like I have TikTok to thank for that. And,
that's, you know, such a good point. Yeah. I never thought about that I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
But like to ask, I want to ask you though about podcasting. Like, how has that been for you guys? Like, what? Because even the podcasting space I knew grew a lot during the pandemic.
Yeah, and definitely.
But even the podcast space for Star Wars, when I think about, okay, what are the top Star Wars podcasts that I know about? And like, I only knew about them before. I think of like the Bros, and some of them are lovely and they're my friends.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, we know they're right. There were the new ones I know of now are not that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say, I'll bring it around back to podcasting, but I feel like TikTok was a great place to, you know, because it's short form content, it's harder to get people to go to your YouTube channel and watch your longer form videos. It's harder. The algorithm on Twitch, like, unless you're looking for a particular game that someone is playing, it's really hard to like be discovered. But now, nice. And I will say, I do enjoy, they're kind of pushing live streaming more on TikTok. And I've gotten more back into it because, you know, I'll go in and I will show up on people's For You pages and people will actually come in, and I've gained like followers that way. So that's one good change, I think, from like newer TikTok. But just in general, I feel like it's a good like little taste of like, if people like your content on TikTok, they're more likely to go visit your other social platforms. So now I know that because of TikTok, I've gained followers on Instagram and Twitter and YouTube now and other things. And it's also a great place to kind of like advertise those longer form contents. Like, if I see a clip of a podcast on TikTok, I will definitely be more likely to go then look up that podcast and listen to a full episode.
Yeah.
So I think without TikTok, I don't know. Like, I think it's been able to bring more of these podcasts to like be created, especially in like with female led nerdy or Star Wars podcasts, have definitely popped up more in the last few years. So I think for like Sawyer and I know Sawyer had the idea originally to make a podcast that was about uplifting and sharing experiences of women in the fandom space, and femmes and queer people in the fandom space. And I had been kind of like, I don't know, I guess creatively struggling in the recent times. I think like how the TikTok algorithm had been treating me lately was not great. Yeah. And I just felt like uninspired. So this is like a new little, you know, branching out thing for both of us. And we both have enough people, I think, that are interested in what we have to say and are interested in this idea. Most of the guests, if not all of the guests that we've had on so far, are people that we are like mutuals with or friends that were excited to come on because they really liked the idea of the podcast. So I don't know, I'm really enjoying it. I'm feeling like a new creative spark from doing it. And we obviously we're huge Star Wars fans, so we've talked a lot about Star Wars, but I think it also gives us the opportunity to talk about other things that we might not normally talk about on our other pages. I don't know. I'm having a great time.
Yeah.
That's great. Diversifying is the key, right? Because TikTok taught us all that they can give it and they can take it away, you know?
Yes.
So, and then, so it's healthy too, like just have someplace else. So, you know, you always know it's not you, it's just TikTok. So,
yeah. And you know what? I've taken your advice recently. When we were in New York or at New York Comic Con, I remember you like really pushing the YouTube Shorts
thing. YouTube Shorts, I preach the word to anyone who will listen.
And I tried it a little bit, but now, like, really in the past, like, 4 months, I've started to see just this, like, because I will not do TikTok Shop. I'm not gonna, like, go after anyone who chooses to, but just authenticity is extremely important to me. I try to, you know, I think it's important to have a private life, but at the same time, anything that I choose to put online is going to be real or, like, true. You know, I try not to exaggerate. I try not, you know, it's very important to me, and I just cannot see myself buying a product. I can't think of a single product that I would need that badly that I would, like, advertise it to other people. I have bought things off of TikTok Shop, but, like, nothing that I would, like, be like, you have to buy this.
Right.
Look at this.
You don't have a QVC.
And also, you know, I don't make content for money. You know, like, I never have. That's not my goal. It'd be nice, but I haven't, you know, and I am grateful for the success that I have had, and I'm more about the impact and the community. So, like, you know, but I've been downloading my TikToks before I post them so that there's no watermark, and then uploading to YouTube Shorts, and I got, like, 20 new subscribers from a video the other day, and I was like, what the heck? Like, okay. Like, maybe this is the way to go.
So here's the helpful thing about YouTube Shorts. Here comes my YouTube Shorts sermon. Is that, you know how in TikTok, you know within 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know within 20 minutes.
Thank you.
That they hate you, or like, oh, this one, huh? Okay. YouTube, it could take months. So you post it and you're like, oh, but then you're like, oh, maybe later. And that has absolutely happened to me. When I first started YouTube Shorts, I posted and got like 20 views. And I'm like, no. And then I had a person who gave me this great advice. No. Just stick with it. So I was posting all my back catalog on TikTok for literally 4 months. And one day, Sawyer and Brooke, I promise you, I opened up my laptop and I all of a sudden overnight had 17,000 subscribers. I'm like, what the heck happened? And it was a video from 4 months ago that all of a sudden blew up. And that happens all the time to me. Like, so something that isn't going great now, oh, okay, maybe later. And sure, and sometimes no, and sometimes yes.
Maybe
it's so healthy. It's like all that, you know, on YouTube, all that work for nothing, and you know right away. And YouTube is like, oh, well, we'll just see how it goes. Or, you know, it's great. It's so great. It ebbs and flows like everything. You know, I can't believe I got lucky on two platforms. I got even luckier on YouTube Shorts, but it's just so much healthier. Anyone who is listening, please do YouTube Shorts. That's the way to go. The other thing I want to talk about with you is that you kind of had two conflicting, maybe because I did post an ad today on TikTok, but I wouldn't like to talk about it. Cause you said, I don't make content for money, but I would like to. But then you also said about integrity. So how do you anticipate, combining those two ideas? Because if you do content for money, how will you reconcile that with your integrity? I feel the same way about TikTok Shop. I have a lot of the same ideas about it. I also just resent TikTok Shop because every fifth video is TikTok Shop. So they really force you to do it, which I resent. Like, let me choose to do it. You know, I don't know. I don't shade anyone who's doing it just like you. Like, God bless, but it wasn't just for me either.
For me, like, the thing about TikTok Shop is that when I'm if I choose to follow someone, like, usually on Instagram or YouTube, and their video is a partnership video or sponsored by something, I'm already following them for a reason, and I am going to probably be more interested or more inclined to trust that person if they're recommending something. And it's usually more aligned with something that I'm already interested in, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, the TikTok Shop, I go on my For You page and I don't have a choice, like, in what I'm seeing and what they're advertising.
Yeah.
And I think, like, a lot of I think it's great. There are some small shops that utilize it. And I think it's really great for them with their, you know, handmade things or their, you know, whatever. But I see a lot of these bigger, like, fast fashion brands also using it.
Yeah.
And so it's harder to filter out what mm-hmm. is like a quality product being shared by a quality, like with a quality review, if that makes sense. Like, and a lot of like paid partnerships, you are getting paid to promote a product, but TikTok Shop, it's like eligible for commission a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I feel like I would be more inclined to be like over dramatic or over excited about an item because I'm trying to sell more of it. Whereas if I am being paid to promote a product after I post my video, I have no say in like who purchases it or whatever, if that makes
right.
sense to
me. Yeah. Well, like one's QVC. Yeah. One's like you're actually, you're hawking. I know it's different. But I want to say again, I know shade to anyone who's doing it. Mm-hmm. I know, I've been at different creator events and I know people like, I'm making so much money. It's really changed my life. And I think that's amazing, you know, and especially as an avenue for, as you talk about women, you know, content creation is yeah. women are a big part of this business and we are the biggest creators, the biggest money makers in YouTube and everything. So if there's this avenue that someone's passionate about and is making money doing it, I think that's great. I just don't think it's yeah. everybody. Yeah. yeah.
But I think you okay. asked a really good question. And like, you know, I think when I say like, I think it's a dream to like make money from doing what you love. Cause I love Star Wars and I love video games and I love talking about them. And, you know, I've been really passionate about incorporating science, like my real life career in science and everything into that. And like, I think that while I can understand how that seems conflicting, but I think
no, it's not, but it's you'll have to reconcile it, right? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think I that's not the position I'm currently in. I've definitely had a couple of brand deals that I've done. And like, first of all, I don't think I would ever take a brand deal that I wasn't like sure I was gonna use the product. And like,
sure.
I also would never take a brand deal with the expectation that I lie about the product. You know, if they give me the product and it sucks, I'm gonna say this sucks. once I was once offered a like one of those tours around Manhattan. Like it was like a tea on the bus, like a high tea in the bus doing a tour around Manhattan. And so I went and it was awful. It was so awful. And the discount code that they gave me was like 5% off of $100 a piece. And I was like, no, I am not selling this to my database. Sorry. Right. Thank you so much for sending me on this excursion, but this is crap. And you didn't even get to pick your own tea. It was weird. No, I mean, I think I don't know. I would have to imagine I would be transparent about the money I was making. But I don't know. That's a tough one. You're the journalist. You're asking tougher questions than
Wait a minute. I just because you just within that thing says I'm so integrity. And then you just said I would like to make money. And it's just because there's so, I think the thing with content creation that's I don't know what I'm going to say. There is a way to do money without doing brand deals. And that's like, if you do long form YouTube, right? There's people that are making all kinds of money and it's just like, but that money is from ads, but it's not you making the ad, you're selling ad time. Mm-hmm. You're not selling it. Google is, and then you get a piece. And I guess I try to sometimes think about it that way, like with TikTok and with the other two that aren't like that, where you do brand deals, that I got, you know, I have a channel that has value, right? And so I'm selling ad time on it. And unfortunately, the way those channels are set up, it's like the ad time is me. Like I do the ad on the channel. So, but I feel the same way about it. Like I've never done anything that I wasn't like excited to do. Mm-hmm. So, but it's a weird little thing to do sometimes.
Yeah, so. There's definitely ethics about it. And I think that you introducing that brings up a good point that I wanted to, you know, outline or not. Well, something I want to talk about if we are going to sit here and talk about content creation is like the responsibility that you have as a content creator, because I think that that's something that has really significantly impacted my approach to content over the last 4 years and how my content has changed over the last 4 years. And I think that it's a conversation we should be having more often amongst creators, but one that we don't have often enough. And so, yeah, I mean, I would really like to take a moment and just talk about what you guys think about the responsibility of content creation. And, like, you know, to me, content, like, anybody can go viral, maybe not anymore with the algorithm, but it used to be on TikTok. Anybody.
Yeah.
But taking that and turning that into a platform is a choice. Mm-hmm. And so I think, yeah, I don't know. I would just like to talk about that for a bit, because I think that it's important. And I think that that's something we're trying to do with YapSesh. And, you know, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Jen?
Are you talking about just in terms of being like a role model or?
Yeah, a role model, someone who uses your voice for, you know, issues that are important to you, like, or even just calling out bad behavior, you know, or saying, you know, there is a no tolerance policy for God knows what you see in the Star Wars fandom.
Yeah, I'll drill down to the Star Wars fandom. When it comes to like, I've kind of had this policy pretty much, not like, I don't have like a list of rules for myself, mm-hmm. but things I keep in mind is I don't like getting involved with starting or finishing drama. I don't like talking about what other content creators are doing. I don't think that that's a path to no joy for me personally. I also have plenty of other stuff to do. Like, I have costumes I'm making. I have skits I've written. I have stuff I want to review. I don't really want to get into beefs with people or weigh in on any of those things. And I know those beefs and those talking about the fandom can actually can result in a lot of views and stuff. Even when I respond to negative comments with a video, and I'll do it occasionally, and some of them are fun, especially when someone gets it really wrong and I can do something really funny. I make the video and I keep it positive and light, like someone's schooling me on a lightsaber totally wrong. I'm like, but you got the hilt right. Good job, Josh. You know, I hit post and I feel terrible. Even though I'm 100% right and I've made an entertaining video, I don't feel good about it. I don't, you know, I just like, oh, but maybe that person just didn't watch the whole video, or maybe they were having a bad day. Like, that's just how I can't, and I'm like, oh, I don't really want to start anything with anybody, even if they were like, not so nice to me. So, when I've done those things, it's been tried to be like a ton of positivity and humor, mm-hmm. and just to kind of be someone that just doesn't get bogged down in it, because I don't want people to, because I maybe want to be someone that you can look to and says, like, that doesn't bother me, and it kind of doesn't. Like, again, I'm kind of busy, so you know, I don't know. That's just how I don't usually, and I think by not getting involved with it is making a statement about it, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So
yeah, I think you have such like positive content that it cultivates a more positive community. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure that you get your fair share of mean comments and things, but generally I would say, at least for me, I try to be more in the positive realm of things. I did, you know, for a long time I would get caught up in responding to hate comments and trying to like clap back at like the dude. I have since I like to just delete the comments and move on
for
my own mental health, because you know I can read a hate comment or something that someone said that was mean about me or a Star Wars character that I really like or whatever, and like it will affect me mentally, even if I try to brush it off, and then I'll like ruminate on it. So for me, it's so much easier just to read it, delete it, and move on.
Yep.
So now I've tried to like cultivate a more positive space, and because of that, I feel like I see less of the negativity overall. Mm-hmm. I think for some people that might get stuck in that like negative space, that's where it can become challenging, especially if you have a very large platform, because your followers are listening to you. They really care about what you have to say. And so I've seen like I've seen some creators with a larger platform refuse to take responsibility for the reactions or the actions that their followers might have.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And I don't know, I guess I'd like to talk a little bit about that in a way that I lost my train of thought. It's gone.
No, I know what you're saying. I don't think it's ever happened to me, but I know what you're saying. Like someone does something and I know there's a recent, sometimes I won't see the beef, but I'll see the, yeah, the summary of the beef.
So a good example would be if I responded to, and I have like a smaller platform, so this doesn't usually happen, but like if I respond to a mean comment, like you said, I will probably feel bad about responding to it, even if I respond to it in a productive or constructive way. Mm-hmm. But if a bunch of my followers go to that person's page and start harassing them for what they're saying, that I would feel, I guess, some sort of personal responsibility to be like, mm-hmm, don't do that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And I think especially we see it in Star Wars a lot with some creators that fall into that more like negative space. They will, you know, they might personally not enjoy something, and even if they are not saying it in a hateful way, sometimes like people that follow them will get the wrong idea and start, you know, harassing people that enjoy that thing.
Yeah.
Or what have you. But they don't take responsibility for, and obviously you can't control what your followers are going to do or say. But I think that there is some sort of like personal responsibility that when you see, mm-hmm, that happen, like
speak, yeah,
up against it, you know?
I completely agree. I'm trying to think, I've never really been in that situation where that's happened. I'm trying to think even on, I can't think of a specific example, but maybe in a smaller scale where someone made and if someone took it, I have responded to comments to that comment being like, no, I think you're getting it wrong. You know, even though this quite never happened to me, I agree with you that, and I would shut it down or like delete the original comment or something that you couldn't go and find them or something to, or take my response video down if that was ever happening, because listen, it's like, we're not forming mobs here. Let's everyone just, we did a thing, we responded, let's all move on. Right.
No. Yeah. But it's, right, it's just kind of like a weird, you know, when you transition from being a fan to being a voice in the fandom, because I think all three of us, you know, it doesn't really matter. I'm also a very much a proponent of, it doesn't actually matter how many followers you have. That is not actually indicative of what your reach is, because I spent a little bit of time in perhaps the wrong communities in the fandom, and people know that. And people on that side of things, you know, they're going to see my video, they're going to see my tweet, and they're going to be like, oh, we know you. And so I think that's why I wanted to focus on this so much, because it's definitely very true to my experience. But like, you know, I'm thankful that it doesn't happen very often. But yeah. I definitely have, you know, I'm, you know, there is a content creator who has kind of fixated his attention on me for the past year, and he repeatedly will send his entire community to my comments to do, you know, they've made accounts making fun of me, they've made accounts making fun of my partner, you know, it's just like, one guy tagged PETA in a picture of my cat and was like, PETA, you need to like call animal services because she's abusing her cat.
Oh my gosh.
I know. It was crazy. And I was just like, but
they are in love with you.
Yes, apparently.
Who does that?
Insane. But then I have these like very loyal people in my community. Aww. Who will go, and it's nice to feel supported, but like they'll go after every single comment. Right. And not only does that, you know, first of all, I am like all about approaching, you know, unless it's a situation that warrants just like a block or just ignoring, right, the comment, I'm very much a proponent of meet people with kindness, and they will either turn tail and go, yeah, what's happening? Or they might even engage in a conversation with you at that point. So I try my best to encourage that. But I sometimes, you know, it's so addicting to get caught up in a conversation like that. And so I have people who are like every single comment, and I will get like dozens and dozens of notifications that
someone is going to bat
for me, but then it turns into an ugly fight. And I'm like, no, wait, hold on. Like, we're not, or even someone the other day, you know, someone said something about, you know, oh, you're not a real scientist, something stupid, whatever. And I happened to be at work. So I just snapped a picture of me in my lab, like,
sciencing away.
And then some guy in my comments who follows me was like, well, you really showed that, dumbass. And I was like,
oh, that one, no. That's
not like I, just like you said, like you sometimes respond to comments and you're funny about it, but then,
right.
So I don't know. That's kind of all I wanted to talk about. It's just like being a creator, having a community, wonderful communities that we fostered. And then like, how do you navigate that? But I don't know.
I've heard different things. Comments are funny. I know people that don't ever read them, don't look at them, don't do nothing, never touch them, nothing. Like they can't. I can't look at that. But I'm like, I gotta check in. Like, what if something's popping off? And I don't know about. You know?
Yeah, I respect those people.
I respect those people too. But what if I screwed something up? Yeah. I've done that. Or I've uploaded a video and there's like a huge blue screen in the middle of it. I don't even know. I gotta like make sure people are, and people are like, Jen, I think there's something wrong with you. You know what I mean? So, and it's a mix. And I'm a big deleter. I delete stuff. Like you were saying, Brooke, about stuff that's mean. I start reading it, and the minute I see where that's going, I don't even finish it. I just hit delete so fast that I don't even give it time for my brain to send it to the heart. Like I can't.
I've said this many times now on the podcast, but I get so much more satisfaction over like reading something like that and just hitting delete. Because yeah. I know whoever wrote that mean comment is going back and checking to see if I responded.
Yes,
to it.
And it's gone. They go
back and it's gone, and they're like, right. Where'd my comment go? And like that gives me so much more satisfaction than like anything else that I could do. And I'm protecting my own peace at the same time.
And the great thing about YouTube, again, is that YouTube, you can just hide it. What they call it, restricted something, that they can still see it, but they are the only one. So they don't even
really?
Yes. Yes, there's a way, and then you can restrict them that they can't ever, no comment they ever make again in the history of them being, because you can't block them on YouTube. YouTube is like free, it's free place, but you can restrict that. I can't think of the word for it right now because I actually haven't done to anybody in a while, but they will never, for as long as they have that account, they will never, any comment they ever make on your videos will never be seen, but they can see it, so they don't even know that you've done that to them. So, but I don't
know. That's nice.
It is kind of nice. And you can also block words, which keywords I use, I do that. You can block personal information. If someone happens to find your address, like I have my address blocked. Mm-hmm. So if anyone wants to type it out, they can't, you know, things like that. You know, there's tools that we're fortunate that there's tools there for people that are just like kind of unhinged, but I've been fortunate that it hasn't really touched me a lot in a way, but you know, I know.
Yeah, our first episode, this guy that's been like following me, he was like waiting in the wings for our first episode to drop. And so we got like 16 different dudes in our first episode in the comments. And some of them were really funny. One of them we actually pinned as the pinned comment because it was like, what did it say? I can't even remember. It was
I just made, so I know we just talked about like not engaging with that kind of stuff, but I have a video that we're going to post that's like posting our hate comments as inspirational posters, because some of these comments are so ridiculous that they're funny, and like, those are the kinds of things like once in a while that I'm like, I'm okay with doing this. They said, shouldn't you things be getting dinner ready for your cats? And I was just like,
no, it's not dinner time. That's what I was responding. Like, it's not dinner time yet. So when it's dinner time, I will do that. Did you have more to say? Like, I don't know. Like, how is that even like a creative hate comment? That's just like, that's an errand.
Yeah, I mean, cats gotta eat. But
cats gotta eat.
Really. But yeah, I mean, it's just like,
Gosh, ladies, like, why?
Yeah, and then one guy. With you? Yeah, this one guy, after he left his initial, like, whatever, he left 46 comments on that video.
Oh my gosh.
And we were like, you know, okay, engagement, you know, like, you know, and that's still our most viewed video on the channel. So, you know, it got pushed out because he left all the comments, but.
Right. Thank you for the engagement. Thank you for the engagement. Thank you for the engagement.
That's what a lot of people like don't understand is I will see people post videos or make comments on videos that they see and they're like, I hate this thing. Like, why does my For You page keep showing me this? I'm like, because you're actively engaged. Because
you watched it and commented and it played while you were commenting.
The For You page, the algorithm does not care whether you love or hate something. If you engage with it, they're going to show you more of that content because it's generated by a computer and a computer doesn't have emotions.
What you said about, so there's something you said earlier about responding to a comment. One of my favorite tricks is responding with positivity when someone, and I don't have anything like what you're describing at all. Like no one, I know, but when occasionally someone leaves something kind of cranky or I'll go to their page and find something really cool. Like your cat is so cute. How long have you had them? What is your name? And then they respond. And then it was like, oh my gosh, my cat's name is Buster. And I'm so sorry about what I said earlier. And like, and it makes me happy every single time, you know, I love doing that. Like, and then they're happy and I'm happy. And, you know,
I do that a lot on Twitter. I do you know, someone has a cool reptile or you know, they make really cool. Like, I remember a couple, over this last summer, there was a guy and he was an artist and I went to his page and I was like, your art is really interesting.
Yes.
I've never seen art like that. And he was like, oh, thank you. I'm sorry.
I think there's an aspect of being a creator online and the audience assuming that we don't look at the comments ever. Especially
apparently.
I've noticed with videos that go like super, super viral and have like thousands of comments and some of them are negative or mean, people can still see that. Like even though, you know, the video has so many views and so many comments, you still get notifications and you can still go back and look for them if, you know, and there's a part of it that I feel like there is some block in like understanding that we are real human beings and not just content, you know, farming robots, I guess.
Right.
And so when you engage in that way, they'll be like, oh yeah, there is a real person behind the thing that they're posting.
Right.
You know?
That's what I was going to say when you mentioned that is I think that it's not just that people don't think they're reading the comments, which I think is true. I think because I'm not sure if you had this experience, I'll respond to them. They're like, oh my gosh, you responded. Wow. Mm-hmm. Even to something positive, which is mostly what I respond to.
Yeah.
But I think there's this feeling that people just forget that we're all human beings, you know, that there's just, no, you're some entertainer, you know, making a video for me to have an opinion about, but no, we're just just people. Yeah.
I think it's interesting, and I put this in the outline, and I wasn't sure if we'd touch on it at all, but I do think it's interesting. We talked about how your, experience in fandom has changed because of content creation, but I don't know if this is, a universal experience, but I know for me that the way that I engage, I do have, a private way that I am a fan that is different from how I am online, you know, because I think that as creators, people want to know our opinions. They want us to react to the new stuff and, you know, maybe sometimes discourse, not for you, Jen, good for you for staying out of it. But you know, people care about our feelings on things. And I find that my discussions with my community when it comes to new shows, The Acolyte, you know, the discussions that I had in my Discord server after the first two episodes dropped were very, very different from the conversations that I was having with my friends and my personal family and stuff. And I just wonder, is that do you guys feel the same, or do you feel like you nerd out online the same way you nerd out with your people?
Yes. I am exactly. Yes. No, I totally understand that difference. And I mean, I'm not going to talk to a stranger in the same way that I'm going to talk to a friend about something, but I feel what you see me post online is exactly like who I am in person. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely a little bit more like extroverted online than I am when, but if I'm comfortable with you and I see you in person, like I'm exactly the same. But
I would say I'm, if I don't pretend to like stuff I don't really like. I don't pretend to like it. Mm-hmm. And if I don't like it, I probably won't talk about it. That's what I do.
Yeah.
I don't really post a lot about what I don't like. I don't want to hear what people's response to that is. And there's so much that I do like. I'm actually kind of an easy, like I like most things, mm-hmm. but there's some things I don't like and I just don't, I don't need to talk about that. I'm talking about something that I like and I'm like, well, this was better than this other thing. This was an improvement on that, but I'm not going to, mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever made a video just sitting down like, oh, this really just bummed me out. But that's, you know, that's a choice. I don't, you know.
But would you have those conversations with like someone in your personal life? Like,
Yeah. I would be like, you know, this was not my favorite, mm-hmm. but
yeah.
But I would never lie. I don't lie on my channel. You know what I mean? I just don't talk about stuff I don't like. Right.
No. It's not, you know, I'm also very easy to please. Like, I don't think that there's maybe like two things in Star Wars that I've ever been like, that was not my thing. But I think there is like, I don't know. Sometimes I get like a DM or a comment and it's somebody who wants me to speak my piece on a new book or a new show or something. And it's like, sometimes I'm like, you know, like I don't want to talk about this all day. Some days, I don't know if that makes me seem like a bad creator, but like some days I'm like, oh, you know, I'd just rather, you know, talk to my boyfriend about it or my cat. I'm going to tell my cat what I really thought about this.
It is different. I mean, I definitely expend more energy if I am reviewing something or talking about something online versus talking about it just at home or with my friends. There's like a different amount of mental and emotional energy that comes into doing that. I was going to say something. And it'll come back to me.
We were talking about if you like something, are you going to talk about it or not? Or if you don't like something, you're going to talk about it or not? And are you the same in your personal life than you are online? And,
it was right there.
Yeah, I know. It's so hard.
It was totally related to this. But it just escaped my brain.
Well, I think with Star Wars, too, it's what's hard is that people just love to glom onto the negative. So that's why I don't really like talking about the things that aren't my favorite. Mm-hmm. But what I do say all the time is that it is impossible, completely impossible, considering the volume of Star Wars stuff that is out there, for us all to like everything the same and all of us to, quite frankly, like everything. Like, there's just, it's not all made for everybody. It's Star Wars is for everybody, the umbrella of Star Wars, but not each individual thing is for everybody. Some are for kids. Some are for adults, you know, and some are for like just different tastes and different paces and different senses of humor, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So, I remember.
Go.
So and it's related to like, if people ask me to, have you read this thing? Have you watched this thing? What are your opinions on it? Like I feel like there's a part of content creation that people that are the first people to review something, the first people to go ride the new Disney theme, whatever ride, or the first person to react to something, like those are the people that are oftentimes rewarded, or the first person to make a costume mm-hmm. of a character from this new movie or new show. And the people that can do that, I think, are great if you have the energy to do that. That's never been something that I am like have the space or energy for. I like to talk about things at my own pace. I take a long time mm-hmm. to like think about what I want to say about something. Like we just talked about, we did our Acolyte recap. I had to watch the episode again and then like spend a day or a couple hours thinking about it. So that's just not who I am as a creator. And so if there's something that someone is interested in my opinion on, I also feel like if it wasn't my thing, like I don't feel like I need to share that because I would rather talk about the things that I am more interested in and more, yeah. even if they're not currently relevant. I think that was what was nice about TikTok for a long time was it was less about, you know, what's the next new thing that's coming, especially during COVID when there weren't any new shows and there weren't any new movies being released. Everyone was like, let's go talk about the original trilogy, the prequels. Like we had such a emergence of love for the prequel trilogy because that's what people were talking about. People were watching Clone Wars again, which were, you know, things that have been out for a while. So that is like where I find myself in like the content space. I don't think there's anything wrong with the people that want to keep up with, and there are some people whose jobs are to keep up with that thing. But that's what I think is nice about making content is that you can choose to engage with it however you want.
Yep. I was a journalist for years, and that deadline pressure about, and that pressure about being first. No, thank you. Never again. I don't like, listen, this is my, I don't want that. I want to talk about stuff when I want to talk about it. And also I don't always feel like I have stuff to say about certain things. And I get, I get conscious about that too. Like I loved Andor so much. I think it is the best thing. Not only is it the best thing that Disney has done since they bought Star Wars, it might be the best Star Wars period. Like it might be the undefeated champion Star Wars. I'm just I don't know if that's true, but I think if someone said that, I wouldn't argue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I made like two videos about it because I just was enjoying it and absorbing it and like enjoying it so much. I didn't really have much to say except, oh my god, it's so great. So like, how many of those kind of videos can you make? So and then I'm like. Because then you start to think like, oh, or do people even know how much I love the show? And then, so I just have always felt like I don't want to just churn out a video because a trailer came out. Unless I really have something to say about it, or I really have something to do. And like, I'm not working for an outlet. I don't have a deadline. I don't have a byline. I don't have a column to fill. I can make a video about whatever I want to make on any day I want to make it about anything. So, but I do get self-conscious about like when it's when it's maybe opportunity time, I'm like, oh no, they don't, no one knows that I love this thing because I never talk about it. But I just, it's hard. I don't want to be just filling up space without something interesting to say, you know, instead of not anything to just say.
Yeah. I feel exactly the same way. And for a long time I posted almost exclusively about Star Wars stuff. And so when there were new Star Wars things, like I felt the same way about Andor. I think it's such an amazing piece of Star Wars, but like at the time I just had nothing valuable to say about it other than just like, oh, it was so good, you know.
Yeah.
And I at that point actually is kind of when I started branching out into posting about other things, and I had dabbled with like the Marvel fandom and stuff, but it was really like when House of the Dragon came out, I like rediscovered my love for Game of Thrones, and that I had plenty to say about. So I started posting. And I think the nice thing about like the TikTok algorithm or the algorithm on anything is like, if you start posting, like most of my follower base was people that followed me for things related to Star Wars. But like, if you post about something enough and you're like annoying about it enough in the algorithm, like the algorithm will pick it up. And so I gained like a whole bunch of new followers from talking about House of the Dragon. I gained a bunch of people when I started talking about The Last of Us when that show came out, because I'm a huge fan of the games. So I don't know. I think that's kind of a nice thing about content is that you don't necessarily have to be. I feel like sometimes we feel like we have to be stuck in a box of, you know, this is I'm known for XYZ or. You know, someone's known for just being like the person that makes really cool cosplays or someone that only does reaction videos or whatever. But I feel so much better creatively when I can branch out and like just do what I want. You know, I've never had like one singular thing or one singular type of video that I post.
Yeah, I mean, I feel very self-conscious about that. I mean, I still, and I am proud of the Star Wars biology videos that I made, because I made a lot of them and I am so, I'm proud of them. However, my relationship to content has changed. My goals for my content have changed. And so, you know, it is not I would still, you know, there is a like science series that I would like to start, and I tried, but it just would not pick up on TikTok. That's disheartening too. That makes you feel self-conscious when you
YouTube shorts
something. No, but it didn't take off on YouTube shorts the way that I wanted it to, but maybe it will in 4 months.
Yeah, I know.
But you know, but someone I was doing someone's podcast the other day, and their producer shot me a message, and he was like, Sawyer, when is the next Star Wars biology video? And I was like, he named a specific species that I had never even heard of in the Star Wars universe. And I was just like, yeah, you know, like, I really do. I am honored that so many people resonated with that. And I know that it was kind of like original and different content. And that was a really memorable part of my life. But it's like, I can't, it would feel disingenuous to turn on my ring light and be like, let's talk about the biology of blah, blah, blah. That just doesn't feel like me anymore, you know? So I would, you know, sometimes I feel like, and then yesterday I was watching Blade Runner, and I came up with an idea for a Blade Runner video. And I was like, does anyone, like, what, should I even try this? Because what if it doesn't, like,
who cares? If you like it,
you can't, you can't, you have to focus on making the best content you can that's going to make you happy and entertain you and be a video that you're happy with.
Yeah.
And anything else is a bonus. That is the only way to make content. Let's pivot to views and all that nonsense, if you don't mind, because that's such a big thing. Like, we're all talking about what does the audience want from me? I don't take requests. I make what I want, you know? Like, when you say, oh, my audience is expecting this, expecting that, like, well, I can't control that, man. You know, it's not a request line. Like, I'm not, you know, someone says, you should make a Darth Vader costume. Well, no, I'm not going to do that. So, because if you don't make a content that you're passionate about and that you're interested in, it comes through. Audiences are so savvy because it's us, right? Like, they can tell when you're not into it or you're not, your energy's low. Like, you, but when you're maybe less so they can tell you, but they can really tell when you're really excited. So if you are excited about an idea, you can't worry about the numbers. And when you figure out how to not worry about the numbers, could you let me know? Because is it possible to learn this power? You know,
honestly,
it's tough. There's a lot of bad days on TikTok. So.
Yeah. There's a lot of bad days on TikTok, but there's a lot of good that's come out of it. I mean, like, you know, I sit here and I think, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but I really am proud of this podcast, and I'm proud of the space that we've carved out. And I think that it's led to these really, you know, we have an outline, but we never know where the conversation is going to go. And it's just, it's nice to get to know everyone else's experiences about content and these crazy journeys we've all been on. Cause I think we can all say, like, we never expected it to
never
go like this.
No.
And the places I've gone and the people I've met and, you know, getting my first Star Wars PR package this past week was, I never in my wildest dreams could I have imagined that that would be something that would happen to me. So I am very grateful, as much as those numbers can shoot us down sometimes. Like, no, I want it to be known. I'm very, very grateful for the opportunities I've been awarded for talking about things that I love.
Talking about things you love. Mm-hmm. And you never know. And the number, and sometimes, you know, I forget sometimes, like, even with a video that it doesn't matter how many people see it, but what if the right person sees it? You know what I mean? The person, someone making a decision about something, or some, they connected with you in a way, and maybe that leads to something else.
Yeah.
You know, I'll never forget, it wasn't a big deal, but I got a PR box from a car company because of about a Marvel, I used to do a series about cars in the Marvel Universe. And I was like, this car company, and like, that video got like some super low number of views, but they saw it because they, you know what I mean? Like, you just never know. It's about not the number of people, but the right people. So the right people aren't going to see it if you stop, and the right people aren't going to see it if you're not making content that you enjoy and that makes you happy, because that all comes through.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, well, I think we had that was yeah. I think we've talked a lot about a lot of things. So I think to wrap things up, we have some like little rapid fire questions.
Ooh.
So I'll throw you some your favorite things. So rapid fire, your favorite Star Wars characters. It can be one. It can be your top three. Whatever.
It'll be top three. It'll be Jyn Erso and Leia. And Chirrut Imwe, Rogue One.
Ooh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. I want to know what your favorite movie of all time is.
Oh, you know what? I don't have one. It's like a favorite food question. Like, there's so many. What I will say is that there's, like, there's favorite airplane movies. Like, you know, you're on a flight.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Or
yeah.
on a train. And you want to watch something that, like, you've seen it a million times and you can maybe fall asleep in the middle, but you just like certain scenes. And then I'll have like little stretches of them. Like for a while it was like No Way Home. Like anytime I got on a flight, I watched No Way Home.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right now it's Dungeons and Dragons. Honor Amongst Thieves. I actually missed that in theaters and I'm crushed. Mm-hmm. I missed it. Cause when I finally saw it on TV, I was like, this is the greatest movie I saw that year. Like it was so, I just loved every bit of it. I thought it was silly and funny and had real heart. Like the ending, the minute they pull back and see Michelle Rodriguez and what happened to her, I start crying immediately because I know it's coming. I'm like, I just got caught in my throat just now. Like, so that's like my new, I watch a movie when I'm traveling every time. So that's my favorite movie. That's my favorite current plane movie. So.
It's so much fun. I love that one
so
too.
So good.
Okay. Oh. So you've made a lot of costumes. But if you had to pick your favorites, I know I love your having to pick every time you go to a convention skits. Those are some of my favorite. But if you had to like really pick your favorite costumes, either that you've made or that you have worn, because I know like you can make a costume and then it's really uncomfortable to wear. So I don't know if you have like a favorite of all time.
Well, I usually again pick three. But what I said to someone about Bo-Katan Kryze, the live action from The Mandalorian, was that not only I'm not proud of that one because it had so many different techniques that went into it. I think if I were to pick what I would wear if I was really in the Star Wars universe, it would look a lot like that. It had cool armor and it had blue. It's just that whole look is what, if I had to pick one to wear always, it might be that one. But it's usually my favorite costumes are the most recent one and ones that involve a lot of different skills. I'm just proud of like learning new things and whether it's adding 3D printing or adding like weaving or whatever. So, but Bo-Katan Kryze is it's
nice.
This is one of my favorites. Yeah.
Do you have a dream costume that you haven't made?
So there's a couple answers to that. One, I think if all resources were unlimited, time, money, space would be the invasion gown Padme from A Phantom Menace, just with the lights, the headdress, such an iconic look. I can make anything. Anyone can make anything if they have enough time, you know, to learn all the things to do. I would never wear it. It has lights and this giant wig. Like that's never going to be something that's going to leave my house for all the time and money it would take to what I would get out of wearing it would be not worth it. But that would be, that's always like, man, that's, like a piece, you know.
Yeah.
And then randomly on a pedestal for me is Hoth Leia. I've just always loved. Mm-hmm. I've owned so many white vests in my puffer vests mm-hmm. in my life, just because I think in the back of my head I just love that look so much, and I've never done it. Almost, I was like, once I do that, that's like, that's it, you know. But that's on a pedestal. That's on a pedestal as well.
No, I was just gonna say I think I've seen one, like screen accurate. Of that Padme costume ever. And it is like, oh my God.
It has so much more detail than you think. Mm-hmm. Like even the wig, there's the whole back of it and it's long in the back, which I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. There is so much to that costume. It would be, but it, what a triumph it would be once you're all done, you know?
Have you made any Padme costumes?
I have the pilot disguise from Attack of the Clones.
Okay.
The red with the green on top. I have that one.
I made the first costume I ever made was the lake dress.
And even beautiful.
That is.
Yeah, zip tying. dyeing fabric is not my jam. So.
Oh yeah, no, not that was a that was literal blood, sweat, and tears. But I'm very proud of it, and it turned out very beautiful. But
it's such a pretty costume.
It is. Okay, what is your favorite convention you've ever attended?
Oh, what a great question. Wow. I don't know if this is the answer, but this is what popped in my head. It was Star Wars Celebration Chicago in 2019. There's something about that one. It was just really fun. It wasn't in Orlando or LA or New York. It was in Chicago. It kind of magically snowed one day. The panels were fire. Like the company was great. Like it was, I don't know what made that one great, but that one popped to mind. But any Star Wars Celebration is usually a pretty good time. Yeah.
Are you going to Japan?
I have tickets to Japan. And so I can't imagine not using them, but I have no travel plans booked, but that has to be soon. Cause that's a big old flight. So.
Yeah, no. I'm in the same boat.
Yeah.
Hopefully. And then the last one is, do you have a favorite theme park? We love this question because we're always surprised by what our guests answer.
I actually have to say California Adventure in Disneyland. Oh, yeah, there's something about that one. And then we go to Florida. We're fortunate enough to go to Florida a couple times a year, and to California way less. So maybe there's something about it and just like the vibe and the food and just the people watching. I really dig the vibe of California Adventure. It's my favorite. So
yeah. I've only been there twice. And the last time I was there, it was after like the Cars Land and the Pixar remodel and everything. And that's a really fun park.
Yeah. It's my favorite. Yeah.
Jeremy runs, doesn't he? He does the Disney runs?
Yeah, in Florida. Yeah, he does the runs. He'll do one usually in January, and that sounds funny. He does the runs. One in January and one in usually the spring. He'll do like two a year. So.
That's cool. One day, perhaps. I'll do it, but
he just does it to see the parks and get to run through the parks in the morning and stuff. You know,
and it's like special characters, right?
Yeah. And then in the half marathon, like you get to go in Magic Kingdom to cheer and the sun's coming up. Nice. It's something special, you know. I can see why he likes doing it. But I like cheering. I'm good. I don't run unless I'm chased.
So. Cool. All right.
Well, to wrap things up, let's answer a listener question. This one's interesting, and it could be a long answer, but we'll try to keep it short because we've been going for a while. So from ND Wise Guy on Twitter, Nick is his name. Great guy. I think we've answered a question of his before, but he asks, what is our wildest hope for the new Jedi Order? So I'm assuming that he's asking about like the Rey movie. What we would want to see out of Rey rebuilding the Jedi Order.
I don't know if I kind of want to say, I don't know if I care. I just want I want a good story. You know what I mean? I'm not placing orders, you know, I want a good story and whatever that means I'm down for, you know what I mean? Because I don't think Force users are going anywhere in the Star Wars universe. So whether we build a new Jedi Order or we're still figuring it out, or maybe we're just doing Force users 2.0 and it's not Jedi anymore, that could all be really interesting. But as long as it's a good story, I'm happy.
Yeah, I would echo that. I mean, I'm so bad whenever I'm on a podcast and someone asks me, like, what are your predictions? Like, what do you hope to see? I'm like, I trust the process.
Right.
Like, it doesn't matter, you know, what it is, what the trailer looks like. I know I'm going to be in the theater, so.
Mm-hmm. And maybe something new. Like I'm a little fan service weary sometimes, which is why the Acolyte feels really exciting. This because of when it's placed, you just mathematically we can't get a lot of that because no one's alive yet, not no one, but you know what I mean. So, and then because of when the Rey movie is going to be, most people are dead. So, easy on the fan service. We're fans. We're going to watch it. Mm-hmm. So tell me a great story and don't worry about anything else.
What about you, Brooke?
Yeah.
I think the only thing that I have on like a wish list, if I had to make one, is I would really love to see Finn return and be a part of the story in any capacity, especially like, I would love for them to revisit his Force sensitivity, whether that's him training with Rey as a Jedi or them just developing that idea of him being Force sensitive further. I don't know. We'll see. John Boyega, I think in recent times, has said like that he is more open to returning than he was before, but you never know. So
that's a great answer. I wish that was my answer. That's a better answer.
I was thinking of Star Wars lawyer Chris in the back of my head being like Jedi Finn.
And yeah.
But I agree with that. That's I think my only thing that I really, really want to see or really hope that we see, even if it's not in the new movie, if we get a book that is like a book about Finn learning how the Force. I don't know. Something would be great.
I am still gunning for this. This is like just to bounce off of what you said, but I'm still gunning for somebody to write a book that is like dual narration. It's half Leia's training as a Jedi and half Rey's training as a Jedi under Leia.
That's jumping back and forth in time. Yeah, that's cool.
Claudia Gray. Get Claudia Gray on the phone right now.
Fire up your word processor, man. Let's go.
Yes. Thank you so much, Jen, for being on the show.
Oh, I'm honored. Thank you for having me. How fun was this? Thank you for accommodating my schedule and making it happen. This was great.
Would you just tell everyone, in case they didn't already know, where we can find you?
I put my little ad underneath there. That is for YouTube and TikTok, at Jen Markham. And then Instagram, I was slow there. And it's at Jen_Markham on Instagram. So that's me.
Amazing. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can remember to like and subscribe and socials, and we will yap with you later.
Goodbye.
Bye.